We're giving away two audio DVDs of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. That's almost 8 hours of teaching. Here's how you can win. Find the Issues Etc. podcast at the iTunes store. Click Ratings and Reviews and write a review. Then send the text of your review to contest@issuesetc.org. The two listeners with the best reviews will receive the audio DVD of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll announce the winners on Labor Day.
When a pregnancy is wanted by the mother and father, their family, their community, even their country, it is easy to think of the bump as a baby. But not every pregnancy is a fairy tale. There are other stories. An ultrasound reveals severe birth defects. A child is raped and becomes pregnant. Another baby would jeopardize a mother's ability to feed her living children. A woman decides she does not want a child at all. These are different pregnancies. They're reminders that an unwanted pregnancy can be biologically the same as a wanted one, but the experience can be entirely different.
That's MSNBC television host Melissa Harris-Perry. It's an interesting theory she has there, essentially, and we'll hear a little bit more from her in a few minutes. Essentially, she is making the case that life begins with the feeling, that sense, that deep feeling of the mother or the father, or in her case, she would even extend it to the country. And then the difference between a wanted pregnancy and an unwanted pregnancy, in her mind, is very clear. She says they're two different kinds of pregnancies. One is a baby. We can think of the bump as a baby. And the other is abortable. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, August the 2nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Jay Watts joins us for the first few minutes of the program to respond to some recent comments made by MSNBC television host Melissa Harris-Perry on the beginning of life. He joins us from the Life Training Institute a little bit later. Listener email on the Issues Etc. comment line. We'll respond to some of your comments, questions, show suggestions, criticisms, and then in the last half hour of Issues Etc., since it's Friday afternoon, Issues Etc., soundbite of the week. Four soundbites we play for you. You listen, then you vote, and your vote determines which one's going to be Issues Etc., soundbite of the week. And it's also your chance to win the LPR bundle package, an I Have Issues t-shirt, and Issues Etc., travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, the Issues Etc. mouse pad, and the Issues Etc. writing pad as well. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc, or you can vote in advance for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Jay Watts is a regular guest. He's a speaker and writer for Life Training Institute. Jay, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, thanks, Todd. It's great to be here.
Melissa Harris-Perry says that there are two different kinds of pregnancies. One wanted, the other one not wanted. It's a baby, and then the other, it's abortable. Are there really two different kinds of pregnancies, as she says?
Well, biologically, obviously not. I mean, it's obvious because with the word pregnancy, what we mean, if feeling a certain way about the unborn or feeling a certain way about your condition were able to stop pregnancy, there would obviously be no need for the act of abortion at all. So we know that when she's saying pregnancy, she means something differently when she's saying they're not the same. She's not, and her whole talk here, as I'm sure we're going to get into, she conflates a lot of different ideas, and that right there is the beginning. She said, well, that's not the same as this pregnancy because that pregnancy is an unwanted pregnancy. Well, we understand pregnancy means a certain condition where an unborn child is developing within the woman in concert with the woman's body towards development. If it could be not pregnant by virtue of strong feelings, there would be no need for abortion at all because people could just prevent pregnancy by being strongly opposed to it. And we know that's just not the case.
She is not the only one to have expressed this kind of idea. It was in a presidential race, not recent, but I would say within the last 10 years, when one of the candidates early in the race was kind of made himself infamous for saying, life begins with the choice of the mother. Isn't that exactly what Melissa Harris-Perry is saying?
It is, and it's demonstrably false. I mean, I have before me 6 pages of embryology textbook quotes that I take with me, and quotes from pro-choice philosophers and pro-choice advocates when I'm going to universities or schools to talk about the issue of abortion, we make the claim that scientifically this is a no-brainer. There is no argument. It's a complete consensus across the board that life begins at the moment of conception, of fertilization. And I could quote six different groups, but I'll quote Peter Singer here for you, who was no friend of the pro-life movement, where he says, in this sense, there is no doubt that from the first moments of existence, an embryo conceived from human sperm and egg is a human being. Everybody, there is no sophisticated argument out there that's going to deny that what we're talking about is a human being and a human life that begins at conception. And that's where I say she makes sort of conflation arguments. She's talking about it not being an issue of science, when I think what she's actually trying to say and what that person was trying to say was that we don't have a life of value yet until the mother or the parents want it or have these deep feelings about it. Not that that's a better argument, but it's at least clearer for what they're saying.
But is she nonetheless conceding when she says this is an issue of that feeling, not science? Is she conceding, in effect, that the pro-life position has all the science, all the embryology on its side?
Absolutely. She says that. She says it is biologically the same. She concedes that point. And so she moves it off of science, saying that it's not a question of science at all. Now, I don't like to be too critical of people like her when they are obviously making errors in how they construct these sorts of arguments, because she's not a professional advocate for the pro-choice side. She is someone who has strong pro-choice passions. So strongly, in fact, that she was wearing, strange earrings recently on television to show her support for what was going on in Austin, Texas. So we're talking about someone who has very passionate feelings, but not very clear thinking. She concedes the biological point, but then she makes up some rule that it is not necessarily a biological determination when life begins. Everybody that I know on the pro-choice side that has a better sophisticated argument would deny what she's saying makes sense. They would just say, biologically, life begins at fertilization. Value would come at some later point. I don't know anybody, though, that's going to try to assess value by wantedness.
Okay, before we go on, what is the major flaw of that argument, that value and life can be divorced from one another and really married at will, literally at the will of the parent or the mother?
Well, we're talking about the will or how we feel about things. And when we're talking about science, we're talking about something material, something that's there. Oftentimes we're talking about science, I tell people, think of things that you can burn, weigh, smell, touch, the empirical senses, the ways that we can examine those things. Our feelings just don't impact the physical world in that way. Now, they could obviously impact our physical biochemistry, but they can't affect whether or not something else is substantively real. So when we're talking about whether or not there is a life that has begun at the moment of fertilization, what we're talking about is something objective. It's not due to our subjective feelings. Subjective information tells us something about me as a person, the subject. Objective information tells us something external to ourselves. When we're talking about a new human organism that's living inside of a woman's womb, we're talking about something that is external to us. And so it doesn't depend on how we feel. It can't depend on how we feel. It has an external life of itself that doesn't in any way come and go based on how we have emotional responses to it.
So the word, the term of art here that I have found so useful in my thinking and attempts to communicate on this is the word intrinsic, and in the term intrinsic value. What does it mean? Why is it important to get that one down?
When we have intrinsic value, and this is important when you're talking to somebody about whether or not human life has value, what we're arguing is, from the pro-life side, is it has intrinsic value. It is valuable by nature and by virtue of what it is, not by virtue of what it can do or what it offers, and that all human life is valuable because we are human beings. As Christians, I would say we have the image bearers of God. We are the Imago Dei. But even as we talk about philosophy, it uses more Thomistic arguments. We're not going to be arguing in a sense that value comes from outside of us. Value is something that we have, and it's real. Now, this is important because if somebody doesn't believe that anything has value, and they think they, and there are more people out there today that believe this, that the state defines what a person is and defines who has value, they don't believe that human beings have any value whatsoever. But most people, if you ask them this question, do you think it'd be objectively wrong for me to kill you right now? They're going to say yes, and they're going to say yes because they see themselves and all human beings as something that has intrinsic value by virtue of what it is, not extrinsic value, not value that's going to come from something that it does.
Now, the occasion for Melissa Harris-Perry's comments were actually the long-anticipated birth of the royal baby.
Yep.
Everybody knows the story here, but it seems to me that this kind of has the advocates for abortion a little on edge. Any kind of big and especially celebrated birth where, it, you know, the whole world waits on pins and needles to find out when the baby is born. It's never presumed through the whole course of that very public pregnancy that it's not a baby. Does this kind of thing keep pro-choicers up at night?
I think that they're on edge anyway. I think Kermit Gosnell's trial started this. And then as a result, anytime you have something like the Gosnell trial, like the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, like the partial birth abortion ban, anytime you have a big public thing that happens and the attention of the country is drawn to the reality of abortion, the public sentiment moves away from the pro-choice position and towards the pro-life position. So I think right now you see them already stressed. And then, of course, as you were saying, when you have a big event like this, where from the very moment that we found out that this royal family had a baby on the way to the very moment that it was born has been this celebration of every stage. It's, look, they're pregnant. She's glowing. You know, Huffington Post showing pictures of Kate Middleton constantly. So you never get away from it. It has to grate on them a little bit because they have to defend that view right now, especially because they really feel like their view is being attacked because the public sentiment is moving away. More people are fine with restricting abortion because they see these abuses that the other side claimed couldn't happen under legal abortion, happening under things like Kermit Gosnell, and they're starting to want restrictions. So I think that abortion advocate is already on edge, and I would believe that this seems like a silly thing to set somebody like Melissa Harris-Perry off, but she was already all set off by what happened in Austin, Texas, and when the laws that were passed recently in Texas, and this is now just an extension of their need to say what they believe and why it's right and to differentiate these ideas for everybody.
Well, when we come back, we'll hear a little bit more from Melissa Harris-Perry on the issue of laws that she feels threatens abortion, not only here in this country, but elsewhere. She makes the argument that it doesn't decrease abortion, it increases it. And it doesn't decrease women's welfare, it actually decreases their welfare. We'll hear what she has to say, and we'll get reaction from Jay Watts, a speaker and writer for Life Training Institute. Stay tuned. Beautiful brown eyes. I paid for the murder before they determine the sex. Choosing our life over your life meant your death. And you never got a chance to even open your eyes. Sometimes I wonder as a fetus if you fought for your life. Would you have been a little genius in love with math? Would you have played in your school clothes and made me mad? Would you have been a little...
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over two centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I have said already a number of times that within the next 20 years, certainly 25, Europe will be Islamic.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt speaking at this year's Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
In some countries, in France, it's already 10%. And it will continue to grow because the West is not willing to resist it. And once they attain a certain percentage of the population, they begin to dominate and get their way. And so I predict that within 50 years, if nothing changes, the West will certainly be Islamic.
You can listen to Dr. Schmidt's entire presentation, Making the Case Against Islam, and six other presentations from the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference on our new audio DVD. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300 to Issues, Etc. before Labor Day. For more information, look for the DVD logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
Eggs are fertilized. Embryos implant. Cells divide and multiply. Fetuses grow. But when does life begin? I submit the answer depends an awful lot on the feeling of the parents. A powerful feeling, but not science.
That's just a bit of what Melissa Harris-Perry had to say on MSNBC on her television program. It's just a suggestion that she has that life begins not when conception occurs, not when a fetus implants, not when cells divide and grow, but in the feeling of the parents, that strong feeling. We're getting reaction to some of the things she has to say. Jay Watts is our guest, a speaker and writer for Life Training Institute. Jay, just for someone just tuning in, respond to that if you would. Her basic argument is, and then your response.
Well, her basic argument is that there are pregnancies that are a part of a great thing, a miracle for the family. Everyone's looking forward to it, a life that's wanted. And then there's a pregnancy where, as she puts this list, and this list is interesting, because she morally equates a child with severe birth defects, a child that's been raped and is now finding some pregnant, financial distress on a family, and then finally in her list, a woman who just decides she doesn't want to have a baby. And she said, under those circumstances, the powerful feelings of the mother cancel out the idea that this is a life that we're talking about. Life begins when the parent, the mother, society wants that child and will celebrate its birth. If it doesn't, then it's not a life. She is making several mistakes there. And like I said, what's interesting to me about the list that she offers, it does expose a little bit of dishonesty there with her, because she starts with severe birth defects, child rape, and then gets to financial distress. But finally, she ends up with a woman who just decides she doesn't want it, which is elective abortion for any reason or no reason at all. Why start with the more intense things because she wants to emotionally load the argument? But her final argument is that if a woman doesn't want the child isn't alive.
Is she essentially saying, do not look in the womb? Don't look at what's going on there. Look into your feelings. That will tell you whether or not there is life in your womb or not.
Yeah, this is a question of the feelings of the people who are going to be ultimately responsible for raising the child, not for what it is that we're actually doing. And in doing so, it needs to be said again, she is going against the entire canon of respected pro-choice philosophers and advocates out there who all acknowledge that it's a human life from the moment it comes to existence. For the most part, they're just going to argue value differently as a philosophical question. She's just dishonestly doing it. She's dismissing science and attaching it as opposed to a sound argument to something subjective like feelings. And so our subjective feelings just can't do the work to cancel out a living being there.
Here again is Melissa Harris-Perry. She's talking here about laws, in this case, overseas laws that she says restrict abortion but turn out badly.
The problem is that many of our policymakers want to base sweeping laws on those feelings. Take Texas. Thursday, Texas Governor Rick Perry signed a bill that bans abortion after 20 weeks and imposes restrictions on abortion providers that could shut down all but five of Texas's abortion clinics. Supporters of the bill say it's about protecting women's health and reducing abortions. If they really wanted to lower the number of abortions, which is, I think, an admirable goal, they're going about the wrong way. According to World Health Organization, abortion rates are the same or higher in countries that criminalize abortions. Prohibiting abortion does not stop it. Instead, women in those countries seek out unsafe abortions, and they are more likely to suffer medical complications and to die. So much for pro-life.
How do you respond to her argument against the proposed Texas laws?
Well, there's three things in there I think that are interesting. Number one, what does she accuse the Texas lawmakers of basing their law on? Feelings. So she attacks them on the idea that they're making law, basing law on their feelings. And then she turns around and says that the feelings of the mother or the parent are so strong, such a powerful motivator, should get such consideration that we ought to base abortion laws on those. Those feelings are legitimate, but the feelings of the Texas lawmakers are not. Right away, we've got something really strange going on there. She does make the claim that it's admirable to want to reduce abortions. I don't understand what would be admirable about it if we're talking about something that's not alive by virtue of the feelings of the people who wish it not to be alive. If there is nothing of value being destroyed in abortion, then there is nothing wrong happening in the act of abortion. And then there should be nothing admirable about limiting it. The only reason it would be admirable to limit abortion is if abortion were a bad thing, if we recognize that something was going on wrong. And then as far as this argument, and this I've heard this a lot recently, the idea that abortion is increased in places where you have restrictive laws, it's difficult to look at what's going on with foreign data and things that are collected differently in different countries. But let's look at our country, because that's the place where we're going to get the best way to understand that analysis. In our country, in 1972, before Roe v. Wade, an abortion was made legal throughout all 50 states by virtue of a judicial statement. It was about 250,000, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of that, abortions in the United States. Once it was legalized, within a couple of years, we got up to a high of about somewhere between 1.6 and 1.8 million annually. And then we came back down to 1.2 annually, million annually, and it stayed there for a long period of time. With our experience in this country, restrictive laws on abortion decreased abortion dramatically. I mean, we're talking about a difference between almost a million abortions per year from where it was in 1972 prior to Roe v. Wade. So with our immediate data, our immediate experience in this country, we see that argument as being false without having to get into what's going on politically in other countries and how that data is being. And we do know, by the way, from experience, that pro-choice advocates are dishonest about numbers. They were dishonest about numbers in the lead up to Roe v. Wade. Bernard Nathanson came out and acknowledged that and demonstrated that over and over again, where they had pumped up certain numbers about the number of women dying and the number of illegal abortions that were going on. So without having to trust numbers that are difficult to parse through, if we look at our immediate experience, we do see here in the United States that the illegality of abortion does decrease abortions. It does not increase it.
So her argument doesn't have a leg to stand on.
No, and even if it were true that we could, I hear this all the time, that we're looking for the best way to decrease abortions and that we ought to work with them when they say that certain abortions ought to be legal. Now, I think there was a great thing that Christopher Kaiser, a philosopher at Loyola, talks about where he quotes Aristotle and the difference between a vicious mean and a virtuous mean. When we say that we're going to kill 100 people, and I say, well, the virtuous thing would be to kill zero people. And you respond, well, okay, we'll just kill 50. You ought to agree with that. We're just going to kill 50 people here. Well, he says, that's not a virtuous mean. That's a vicious mean. And so you can't ask pro-lifers in principle to work with you on vicious means unless insofar we're trying to move forward towards that ultimate virtuous zero. So here she's saying that we're going to decrease abortions by legalizing it and making it more readily available. Well, if that were true, if we could increase abortions by making them illegal, then why do they fight all of the restrictions on abortion all over the United States if it won't affect the number of abortions whatsoever? Because they all say that the reason they're fighting them is because it's going to make women not be able to have access to abortions, not because abortions won't just decrease altogether. They say that it will decrease and women are going to be forced to have children they don't want.
Let's see what Chris has to say. He's calling from Michigan. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, I go to discussion groups, and I get pro-choicers who keep trying to tell me that the, quote, and I'm saying this in quotes, the fetus isn't human because of 7 inches of location.
Chris, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in Michigan. Your thoughts there, Jay?
Well, that we have a science. When we argue the philosophy, when we move to the argument of whether or not human life has value, we all acknowledge that human life is there. Now the question is, does human life have value? That's a philosophical question, not a scientific question. And we discussed earlier that that value can't be determined by the subjective feelings of the parents. So what does give them value? Well, Stephen Schwartz, a philosopher, said it can't be size, level of development, environment, or degree of dependency. And we call that the SLED acronym because we don't understand where you are locationally, as far as when we're talking about environment, as things that give you or take away value. Where you are changes. What you are, when we were talking earlier, Todd, about intrinsic value, that doesn't change based on your geographical location. There can't be something magical, and even Peter Singer acknowledges this, there can't be something magical that happens to a life where it has no value when it's biologically exactly the same and it moves out 8 inches down the birth canal and suddenly magically becomes this valued thing, this thing that it would be wrong to kill. That doesn't happen by that trip. It doesn't change the nature of the life. It just changes the location of where it is. And so that would fall under the L of, or the E of the SLED acronym. The environment cannot do enough philosophical work to make it valuable or to make it the kind of thing that we're allowed to kill.
So given the argument that we've heard here, and it's as we said before, it's not the first time we've heard it, do you sense that with Gosnell, with the birth of the royal baby, with the pushing of laws in Texas, where the opposition is becoming so fierce to these things, very, very public debate in that state to bring about any kind of basic restriction on abortion clinics. Are the pro-choice forces kind of getting a bit desperate, at least for the time being?
I think they're animated. I think they are getting they are getting very animated and impassioned, and they're looking for a response, and they're looking for a way to respond to this. And I think what Melissa Harris-Perry has done here, I mentioned earlier that they were seizing things like tampons and bottles of urine and feces and things like that from pro-choicers at the Texas, was the Texas laws were being passed because they were trying to sneak them into the legislature to throw at people, to throw at pro-life advocates. Melissa Harris-Perry then later on television, while she's doing news, wore earrings with tampons basically hanging from them to try to be, to show her support for this. There's a desperateness there. There's something where they're getting desperate because they see things moving away from them, and they're looking for some response. I do think this is a much more measured response from her. Look at where she went back to. She went back to a very heartfelt appeal to the idea of birth defects, child rape, the feelings of parents, trying to attach people again to something. There is desperation there, and they have lost, as you said, we acknowledged earlier, they lost the biological argument, and they're not sophisticated enough, and oftentimes when you're talking about somebody like her, to argue the philosophical arguments. I think they lose those too, but I do think there are much better philosophical arguments out there from people like David Boone and Judith Jarvis Thompson than you're getting from someone like Melissa Harris-Perry.
Jay Watts is a speaker and writer for Life Training Institute. You'll find a link to Life Training Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jay, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with you, our listeners, through our listener email. We've got a lot of email to go through. And the issues it said or a comment, quite a number of comments to react to as well. That comment line, by the way, is open 24/7 for anybody who wants to use it, especially our beloved on-demand listeners. Since they aren't listening in real time, they still have a question, a comment. They still want to add something. They got to show criticism or suggestion. It's all welcome there. The issues it said or a comment line, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. 8382. Listener email on the issues, etc. comment line on the other side of the break, and then in the last half hour of the program on this Friday afternoon, August the 2nd, we will be playing Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. You can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. We'll be right back with email and the comment line.
Would you like to help your son or daughter achieve their maximum athletic potential? Hi, this is Jeff Schwarz, General Manager of Lutheran Public Radio. My friend, fellow parishioner, and certified athletic trainer, Kevin Reisick, is the owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. Arch Fitness specializes in sports performance training for middle school to collegiate level athletes. For more information, call Kevin at 618-670-6952. 618-670-6952.
We're giving away two audio DVDs of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. That's almost 8 hours of teaching. Here's how you can win. Find the Issues Etc. podcast at the iTunes Store. Click Ratings and Reviews and write a review. Then send the text of your review to contest@issuesetc.org. The two listeners with the best reviews will receive the audio DVD of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll announce the winners on Labor Day.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan, gathers to receive our Lord's gifts in word, baptism, and supper every Sunday morning at 9:15, Bible study at 11. Join us at 4219 Park Lane in Door, or visit us on the web, epiphanydoor.org. Christ-centered, cross-focused, historic, confessional, liturgical, Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan, epiphanydoor.org, 616-681-0791.